Welcome to Not So Different, a podcast from the Center for Biosimilars. I'm your host, Assistant Editor Skylar Jeremias. Reference adalimumab, also known as Humira, developed by AbbVie, was approved by the FDA in December 2002 and quickly became a blockbuster drug used to treat 12 rheumatic and inflammatory conditions, including rheumatoid arthritis, psoriatic arthritis, and ankylosing spondylitis. Biosimilar competition overseas has eroded much of AbbVie's international market share. Humira's patent thicket and settlements have shielded the drug from U.S. market competition posed by biosimilars until 2023. Additionally, AbbVie developed and received approval for a high-concentration citrate-free formulation, which has rapidly become the dominant form of adalimumab, posing an additional challenge to biosimilar competitors. However, Celltrion Healthcare and Alvotech are positioning themselves to be the leaders in high-concentration citrate-free adalimumab biosimilars, with Celltrion getting the green light for Euflima in mid-February 2021 from the European Union to enter the market. With new versions of adalimumab on the horizon, what will this mean for the market and the biosimilars already marketed and in the U.S.'s pipeline? We sat down with Dr. Sarfaraz Niazi, an adjunct professor of biopharmaceutical sciences at the University of Illinois and the University of Houston, and founder of Cariobiologics, Adelobiologics, and PharmSci, to discuss the implications for the adalimumab market and patients. So, to start us off, can you explain for our audience what the major differences are between the lower concentration adalimumab products and these higher concentration citrate-free formulations?
The first thing I would like everyone to understand that antibodies act as a buffer. So what happens is this, the more protein you have, the more is what you call the buffer capacity, okay? So while a very dilute solution of an antibody may require a buffer, a higher concentration has no need for a buffer because the molecule itself is buffering its surroundings. So what happened was, I'm talking about 20, 30 years ago when we began developing these antibodies. Our first target was you're going to be giving them by IV injection or by IV infusion, because they wanted to avoid, perhaps smartly, the process of absorption through sub-Q or IM. In the case of IV, it's 100% delivered. If you put 10 milligrams, you have 10 milligrams inside. Okay. FDA never questions about, you don't have to show blood level profiles. But when you do sub-Q and IM, surprisingly, the bioavailability of these molecules is not 100%. Some of that only 50%. Okay, now you have a big issue. Okay, how do you manage it? So they decided to make intravenous solutions, some of them requiring a transfusion over long time because they were very dilute concentration, and therefore they needed a buffer system. Then it was rightfully determined that it's not convenient, okay? If you want to get an IV injection, you got to go to the hospital or doctor's office and other things, okay? So the focus was on sub-Q, which is the most, a convenient method. I am on insulin. I take it several times a day. No issue at all, okay? But in sub-Q, okay, you cannot put a large volume, okay? You're limited to very small volumes, just like you're getting your COVID-19 vaccine, it's a small shot you get, okay. So do that, okay. They added more protein and made a higher concentration. So now they reached a point where a higher concentration, which is some very small volume, is also highly a buffering agent. So you don't have to use a buffer. You know, citrate was a very well-known buffer. In the case of adalimumab, let's say, AbbVie's product, and I know a lot about it, they chose the citrate buffer. But you know what happens when a drug company is developing a product? The time is of essence. So if they were to change that buffer, they would have delayed their filing for at least a year. So what happened was then, as soon as the patent began to expire, now they have an opportunity to reformulate it, actually go back to what they should have done in the first place. And they remove the buffer, and aqueous solution will be perfectly stable, just as if it had a buffer, if the concentration is high. But definitely everybody wants to get away from IV infusion. So that's a very short answer to a very long question.
How do you anticipate these new formulation products to impact biosimilar market trends?
First of all, convenience is one of the major aspects of administering these drugs. Sub-Qs are going to be very convenient. The cost to patient will be reduced because you no longer will have to involve the IV. IV costs more money to inject than sub-Q does. You know, any nurse can just simply put it in there, or you can do it yourself. I would say about 70-80% of the antibodies can be easily formulated in a high concentration IM or sub-Q. And I think that is that will be the trend in the future. The interesting thing is, which I want everybody to know, is that antibodies are as a class we are talking about. There will be some exceptions here and there that may not be most suitable for sub-Q, but most of them will fit very well, the bill. I also anticipate, you know, most of them not having any buffers in there. There's no need for it, which you know what, it simplifies the formula, which means you have to do fewer studies. It is much more convenient to establish the stability in a simple formula. So this is definitely a trend. The unfortunate part is that the big companies have rushed into filing so many patents. I also practice patent law, so I know the dread of facing these things. Okay. Some of them have gotten patent. I don't want to name them, shouldn't have gotten it. And it just doesn't make sense to have a patent or something. So somebody out there got to go and challenge them. I think the wall that has been created, I call a buffer wall, for no better reason than to be a pun, is really strong. I mean, look at the Adalimumab, AbbVie's product. Come on, you know, there's nothing unusual about removing the buffer, but they got a patent on it, which creates a problem, if not the problem, for biosimilar developers.
How do you think these will affect physician prescribing patterns?
So physicians, well, that's a long topic, but I'm going to make it short, it is so much more convenient for physicians to give a sub-Q product than IV product, if they believe in biosimilars. There are a lot of people who still don't believe, which is a very long topic, and I had the opportunity of discussing it with a lot of physicians. But they will see it as very positive, indeed.
What do you think will happen with regular adalimumab products? Will these products completely displace the original adalimumab concentration, or do you foresee more of a split market?
Eventually, they will withdraw everything else from the past. Two reasons. A, when you go and state that my biosimilar product is similar to a product, that product will no longer be in the market. So you won't be able to go and tell the physician that my product is same as AbbVie product, because it's not. And AbbVie will make a point to physician that, listen, this is not biosimilar. Okay. So I think if I were advising them, and of course, it's a business decision on a scientific basis, I have disagreement, but absolutely, I would replace it. But I would not go in a jerk motion. I'll just go slowly, because they still have some exclusivity till maybe another year or so. Oh yeah. So in answer to your question, ultimately it will all be replaced with a different formulation.
The U.S. currently has 6 FDA-approved biosimilars for lower concentration adalimumab that are unable to enter the market until 2023. How do you anticipate adalimumab discounts will be affected by higher concentration formulations?
So this is one topic which I think requires a lot of discussion, is that in my projections, I think ultimately, biosimilars will be controlled by payers. I have always said, and I will repeat every time I get a chance, is that when FDA approves a biosimilar, it comes with a good housekeeping seal, which reads as follows. There is no clinically meaningful difference. Okay. Somehow, this statement has been buried so deep. Okay. So what will happen is that when the cost differential is high, okay, then the payer will decide, or the hospitals will decide which product to choose instead of it. What is happening right now is that the difference is not as large, number one, and the suppliers don't have multiple products. So I'll give you an example. Okay, I'll give a name. If you're buying from Amgen 10 products, when there will be enough biosimilars, then what will happen? A, the price will drop. And I have said it before, and I believe 70% drop is not uncommon. So what's going to happen is that it will have to take a pivotal a turn to cost, so that the payers become the ones who determine what goes into patients. And which is perfectly, scientifically and legally acceptable. But I don't think we will be able to motivate prescribers. I'm giving you from a firsthand knowledge about how they think. If they have to, they will do it. But don't expect them to understand the nuances of biosimilars and cost saving. Payers will walk in and the whole entire scenario will change. So whether it's a sub-Q or IV becomes irrelevant at that point.
And lastly, do you have any concluding thoughts?
Oh, I have many. I think the agencies, I work very closely with many agencies. They are all awakening up to the entire development process for biosimilars. Okay, I said this in my first book that eventually biosimilars will be like generics. Okay, now, there was a huge mental block that is coming down slowly. So I'm expecting, anticipating a much faster development and a very large entry of biosimilars within 5 years. There will be no requirement for efficacy testing, clinical efficacy. And that's my big mantra that I'm selling. So yes, biosimilars will be a lot more abundant. The price down will be significant. Big pharma will go out of biosimilar business, just like they did 30, 40 years ago for generics. And we will no longer have these issues that we're talking about today, which one to select. The cheapest one.
Well, Dr. Niazi, thank you so much for sharing your insights with us. And thank you to our listeners for tuning into this episode of Not So Different. You can find additional information in the show notes. And until next time, you can visit us at centerforbiosimilars.com.